Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday. It's a community newspaper for a community of felons and the guards who keep them there. The articles are extremely well written, and they cover all kinds of issues. Inmate releases, the latest developments in the federal court battle over reducing California's too large prison population. Stories about events that are taking place in San Quentin. Stories about executions and where they are taking place in this country. Celebrations of the second annual Veterans Day. Special programs where graduates who are inmates promise to work for peace. The inmates are editors and writers of the San Quentin News. It is one of the country's only inmate-produced publications. Because the inmates don't really have access to telephones, we are not able to speak with them directly, although we do have a couple of the inmates who are editors and reporters talk about and talk very earnestly about their work. We do have advisors with us who will talk about this. It's been going on for quite some time, and they really distribute a huge number of newspapers, and it's fascinating to read them. Joining us this hour to talk about the San Quentin News, Steve McNamara, who was owner, editor, and publisher of the Pacific Sun from 1966 to 2004. He now advises the San Quentin News, and it's one of the few inmate-produced newspapers in the whole world. Steve, thank you very much for joining us this hour.
Glad to be here.
And also joining us is Joan Lissator, who's a writer and producer for Life Stories DVD, a video production company. She's also worked for the Marin Independent Journal and Crittenden News Service, columnist for the News Marin, and assistant to the president for public information at the College of Marin. She's a returned Peace Corps volunteer and is also an advisor to the San Quentin News, the inmate-produced newspaper at San Quentin State Prison. Joan, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. For starters, let's talk about the long history of this newspaper. It has been ceased publication every now and then, but it goes way back in time when the first one was published, doesn't it?
Well, there was actually a precursor publication called the Wall City News back in the 30s. And that vanished, and then a rather famous and progressive warden named Clinton Duffy began the San Quentin News in December of 1940.
What's remarkable to me is to read the quality of the writing. You can see these online. Some of these articles are really heartfelt and very, very well written. And also, when you read them, you realize how important this must be to the inmates who receive the newspaper, but also those who work on the paper, Joan. It gives you a sense of purpose, but there are also a lot of issues that need addressing, aren't there?
And we bring in to them in, and they take other publications to get ideas of things, but then do the stories completely themselves with information that they've received.
So tell me about I mentioned just a variety of the stories. Are there certain kinds of issues that are repeatedly on the front page of the paper? Is, for instance, prison overcrowding, hunger strike in California, which has made much news, has that been page one for a while now?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've had that on page one. Well, those are interesting stories. We tend to do people, personal stories more on the front page, especially stories of men who have gotten out and are doing well, which there are a lot of. We've had a couple of members of our staff who have gone on, one gone on to work for a newspaper on the outside, and two others that were staff members until about a year ago and are doing really well on the outside.
How do you get information if you're not allowed access to the internet, if you can't take your tape recorder and go interview the governor or people on all of these issues? How in the world can you do a newspaper?
Well, they can. There's no way that they can pick up a telephone and call the governor.
Right.
However, they can arrange to have a monitored conversation with an outside person. A lot of the stories come about because they have people on the outside, such as Joan and myself and two other advisors, who sort of harvest leads from using Google They harvest leads from other publications, and those are then used as starting points for stories they are able to research on their own, as long as they have a correctional officer sitting nearby listening to the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And Joan, let me ask you, I have said at the beginning that this is one of the few inmate newspapers run by inmates in the whole world. Why is that the case? Why aren't there many of these?
Well, I don't know. I started actually in 1981. I had just left a job as a reporter and was teaching journalism at a local college. And I was on the, it was the County Board of Education, and we ran the programs, the education programs at that time in San Quentin. So I was at a graduation and met some of the men who knew my background. They had been trying to get a paper out, but they'd get one out and it would get shut down for one reason or another. So they asked me if I would be an advisor to them and keep them out of trouble. So we did that pretty well until 1984, when the Supreme Court said that they could not censor newspapers, the prison newspapers, and that was the end of the newspaper. If they couldn't censor them, they didn't want them. So it was a number of years till they came back.
Hmm. Which Supreme Court said that? The California?
No, that was the U.S. Supreme Court.
I see. So they could come back, though, then, because they didn't have to worry about censorship, or what?
No, the prisons canceled the newspapers. They felt if they couldn't censor them, they didn't want them. And actually, when we came back 5.5 years ago, first thing I did was call Southern Illinois University, who had given out the awards, the American Penal Press Association Awards, which the San Quentin News had won in 1982. And I called to find out about it, and they said, what prison newspapers? There aren't any prison newspapers. And that's when we knew that we were the only one at the time.
Remarkable.
Well, turns out we're not really the only one. There seem to be three in the country. There's a famous quarterly magazine published at Louisiana State Prison in Angola called The Angolite. And then there is a publication much closer to you in Minnesota called The Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And that was founded 125 years ago, and at a time the early staffers were a couple of the younger brothers who had been arrested in a famous bank robbery up there. And that paper's been going. Now, and there's also a paper in Texas called The Echo. Now, the difference between these four newspapers is that two of them, the Angolite and the San Quentin News, are pretty much produced entirely by inmates. The other two have a very strong relationship with the prison, which is to say, you might say they are publications of the more closely tied to the prison administration.
I see. And why did you become involved in becoming an advisor? Who asked you, and did you have any second thoughts about saying yes?
Well, the answer to the second question is yes, I did. I had published a newspaper in Marin County, which is where the prison's located, for 38 years. And although members of my staff had been very interested in criminal justice and San Quentin Prison, personally, I wasn't. And what happened was 5.5 years ago, as Joan mentioned, the retiring then warden of the prison, another progressive fellow named Robert Ayers Jr., decided that as one part of his legacy, he would like to revive the then dead San Quentin News. And he looked around for four or five people within the newspaper business that he came in contact with and asked if they'd come work on this revival project. Hmm. I was reticent, but I thought it might work out, and so I was astonished to find that it was not only not a scary place to be, but a very rewarding place to be, and I've been delighted to be there ever since.
What's rewarding about it, Steve?
Well, first of all, the fellows who work on the paper are exceedingly bright. That's not to say all 4,200 inmates at San Quentin are stupid, or no, are bright. But there's the cream of the crop.
Mm-hmm.
Also, San Quentin is a very unusual prison within the California system. There are 34 adult prisons in the state, and although San Quentin has a somewhat grim reputation, in fact, it's the prison where the inmates in the other 33 prisons hope to be. And the reason they
really
hope to be there is that it has upwards of 60 to 70 different programs.
Uh-huh.
And they range from yoga to the newspaper. And the point is that when you go up for a parole hearing, the people sitting there determining your fate want to know what you've done that might cause you to be a different person than the one that was incarcerated. And a program is something that's absolutely essential in that process. At the other prisons, there are very few programs. At San Quentin, as I say, between 60 and 70, and there are upwards of 3,000 community volunteers who come in. And again, at all the other state prisons, there are very, very few volunteers. So
there's 10 times as many at San Quentin.
I'm sorry, Joan. What?
10 times as many at San Quentin as all the other prisons.
Hmm. Well, knowing that that's where people would like to go if they're incarcerated, why don't other prisons follow suit and emulate these programs?
Good
from
good
your
question.
Words to the your mouth to the governor or the secretary. Yeah, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the reasons that there are so many volunteers is that it's located, the prison is located in the San Francisco Bay Area, which
right.
is a famous liberal, famously liberal location. And it also has a strong tradition of community service. So there's a large pool of people to draw on. If you've got a prison that's way out in the boondocks, there are not so many people interested in coming in as volunteers.
Mm-hmm. How do you get I was interested in reading that the average education of the inmate at San Quentin is a sixth grade education. The newspaper seems to me to be written at a fairly sophisticated reading level. Is there a disconnect between a lot of the people who are reading the paper and the people who are writing the paper?
Joan, what do you say?
I don't. Some of the men that we work with have degrees. I always say we work with the cream of the crop. I don't mean to put down anybody at San Quentin who's not on the newspaper staff, but we do work with, and the men we work with are all very bright, and they have all turned their lives around. Mainly they've taken programs at San Quentin. There's so many things available to them, and they are the busiest people I know. If I go into San Quentin at a time other than my regularly scheduled time, you can't make an appointment with these men because they're so busy. They have so many things going on, and they realize that. And as Steve said, some of it helps a lot if they go up for parole, but I think they do it also for their own, for the rewards that they find in life, and also getting together with other people who care and want to turn their lives around. I think that has a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm. So have you looked at rates of recidivism? Are they lower among inmates who have been released from San Quentin?
Well, oddly enough, that was one of the very first questions I asked when I was involved in the paper 5.5 years ago, and they don't have that number. Now, it's not quite as ridiculous as it might sound. You'd think that if there was one outpost within the prison system that was doing good, they'd want to measure that and replicate it elsewhere. The problem is that few, if any, inmates stay at one prison throughout their whole career, as it were, in prison. They're moved around a lot. And so the answer one often gets when you say, gee, why don't you guys measure the recidivism rate of people at San Quentin and show how this works? The answer one gets often is, well, nobody spends their whole time at San Quentin. So how do we tease out those numbers? Well, it could be done, but there doesn't seem to be as much interest in doing it as one might hope.
Mm-hmm. So I would assume, going back to that sixth grade education, that there must be some literacy classes going on, maybe book clubs going on at San Quentin?
Oh, no, there's regular education programs that pay for GEDs and then for AA degrees, and then there's also some hope of getting bachelor's degrees in. So they have regular classes, regular scheduled classes and regular terms and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, San Quentin has, and Joan, correct me if I'm off base on this. I think it's one of the few prisons in the California system, at least, that has a privately financed program whereby inmates can get a junior college degree. an AA degree. It's called the Prison University Project, and it's really quite a remarkable program. They've got instructors who come over from Berkeley and, I guess, occasionally up from Stanford. And this supplements the state's educational program, which is basically there to raise the level of education from what you just mentioned up to, you know, past high school.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot not only sort of get a high school equivalent degree there, but you can then move on in this private program and get an AA degree.
That's quite a program. Who pays for production of the newspaper? That's no cheap endeavor, is it, Joan?
Volunteers and people that send us money.
Oh.
Yeah, the prison shut down the print shop. I guess, Steve, were we about a year and a half into, or 2 years into production? They cut off the print shop, so we had to find a way to finance it. And we've gotten some grants, and then other people we appreciate so much sending contributions. And Steve knows more about that than I do because he handles the money.
Mm. Steve?
Yes, from its birth in 1940 until the fall of 2010, the paper was printed on a pretty old Heidelberg sheetbed press in the prison print shop. And then the state was going through one of its periodic moments of economy, and the governor decided to shut down the print shop. It was a decision that we all thought was a little peculiar, but it did have an upside. And the upside was that we moved the production of the paper from the print shop to an outside printing plant that I used to own, where my wife and I used to own when we owned the Pacific Sun.
Mm-hmm.
And because the people to whom I'd sold the printing plant, they and I were still on very good terms. We managed to get a very good price for printing the San Quentin News. Now, given that we got a good price, that still, it wasn't zero. And so we had to go out and begin to raise money from a variety, as Joan says, from individuals and foundation. And I set up a nonprofit called the Prison University Project, which operates under the wing of a 501c3 called Media Alliance. And we had one wonderful windfall about a little over a year ago, in which a San Francisco foundation called the Columbia Foundation gave us a grant that will carry us through basically 2 years of printing. And then there are plans that the inmates have to vastly expand the reach of the paper. Right now it's 11,500 copies printed, and they go to San Quentin plus 16 other prisons, 200 copies each to 600 to 16 other prisons. The inmates have a dream to go to every prison and every inmate, and now where that money will come from is a little uncertain.
So it's one of the few really flourishing printed newspaper endeavors in the country right now, right? They're expanding.
The irony, of course, is that they have no access to the Internet. So
right.
What is doomed
right.
newspapers elsewhere can't doom them within a prison with no Internet access.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to welcome phone calls. Two of the advisors to the San Quentin News are our guests this hour. Steve McNamara, who was owner, editor, and publisher of the Pacific Sun, and now advises the San Quentin News. Joan Lissator is a writer and producer for Life Stories DVD, a video production company. She's also been a reporter for the Marin Independent and other newspapers. She is a returned Peace Corps volunteer and has a BA in journalism from San Francisco State University. And she is an advisor to the San Quentin News. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Both of our guests have talked about the cream of the cream, the people who are writing for the newspaper, who are editors and reporters. We couldn't talk to them, as you can imagine, because they don't have access to phones and can't do radio interviews, but we do have, you know, a few little clips that give you a real sense of the quality of the people who are running the paper and what their dreams are. So you'll hear from them during the course of this hour. This is the editor of the San Quentin News, and his first name is Arnulfo Garcia, on the mission of the paper.
Yeah, my name is Arnulfo Garcia. I'm currently doing 65 years to life. I'm the editor-in-chief for the San Quentin newspaper here at San Quentin State Prison, and we've been in existence now for 5 years, and our distribution today is 11,500 newspapers, and our goal is to get a newspaper to every prisoner in the state of California.
Let's go to phone calls. We're talking about the San Quentin News, one of the very few prisoner-written and run newspapers in this country. All the journalists are inmates. Their target audience, the fellow prisoners in California's penal system, particularly inmates at San Quentin, but they have dreams, as you heard the editor of the paper say, to have it distributed to all of the inmates in all of California's prisons. Two of the advisors are with us this hour. We go to Connor in Madison for our first call. Hi, Connor.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, go right ahead.
So as a journalism student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, it's really inspiring to see work like this being done in a prison system. I was wondering, was it started out by inmates requesting to write news articles, or was it more of an idea from outside groups wanting to see journalism inside the penal system in California?
I think a little bit of both.
Go ahead, Joan.
Started in 1940 by the then warden Clinton Duffy. He wrote a couple or three books after he retired, and he did explain why it was he wanted the paper to arise. And he said that the usual transmission of information within a prison, which is pretty constant, is the rumor mill.
Mm-hmm.
Information's passed from place to place. But as with most information of that sort, it gets distorted as it goes from one person to the next. So he wanted there to be a place where the information was out there pretty much settled, in the sense that there was this one version of a shooting, and there used to be a lot of stories about shootings, and not the rumor version of it. So it was his hope that it would be a place where more accurate information about the events within San Quentin. Now, needless to say, the guys who were writing it loved the opportunity to do so. So, in answer to your question, well, the administration wanted a outlet for more accurate information, and the inmates were happy to provide it.
And Joan, as an advisor, do you give them direction on style, or what exactly is your mission?
Well, I'm not, but we work with them on style. Excuse me. They do a story, and then some of the men we work with at a time, but usually they'll do the story, and then we'll sit down with them, and if it needs any little tweaking, or we'll make a suggestion, you know, maybe your lead is down here in a third or fourth paragraph, or something of that sort.
Uh-huh.
But at this point, some of the men that have been doing it now for, well, I think probably the longest is maybe 4 years, but they have learned so much, and then they help each other. We also have a journalism guild, and that meets once a week, and that some of the staff go, but it also is to bring in other men who are interested in writing for the paper and learning journalism style.
I know that some of the stories, when you're in prison, you say they're all quite busy, but you also have, I would imagine, a lot of time to just think about your life and do self-reflection. I wonder how many of the articles are similar to the one that I read, Brian Shipp's incarceration, and really an apology to his father and a very heartfelt mm-hmm. personal memoir of why he wound up incarcerated and what his father's response was. It really made you pause.
Yeah. Well, we try not to have too many of those stories, too many stories that are, I mean, journalism style. We have a few opinion pieces and things of that sort, but pretty much like a newspaper. I was thinking before we were talking that San Quentin is about the only newspaper I know of that's growing in circulation and growing in size. So we really want, those of us who've had our careers in journalism really care about keeping it alive, too.
Mm-hmm. How often is it published?
Monthly.
Once a week?
Monthly.
Oh, monthly. I was going to say once a week is is a lot, isn't it? I was also interested in the story, and it's just an indication of what you were talking about earlier, the 75 new GRIP graduates promised to work for peace. There was a program that those who wanted to participate in to find out what the root cause of violent tendencies was. Isn't that interesting that there was a program and everybody wore caps and gowns who graduated? It was quite impressive.
It was quite a celebration, really was. It's a fabulous program, as are all of the programs there, but this one especially really attracts a lot of the men, and they seem to get an awful lot out of it.
Mm-hmm. What about the hunger strike in California, and can you be, when the paper covered that, I know there was great interest in covering it. I'm wondering how it was covered. Was it an expose on conditions in prisons? Was there a sense of outrage by inmates? How was it covered, and how much can you inject opinion?
Well, you've put your finger on one of the delicate areas of coverage. We were pretty straightforward about saying this is what the prison administration says, and this is what the prison law office and other inmate groups say. No, this would not be an area in which we would want the inmates to be pounding the table about what dreadful conditions are in effect at Pelican Bay and elsewhere. I think one of the interesting things that happened, and it was about a year ago, I mentioned earlier that there's a publication in Louisiana called The Angleite. It was famous largely because of the efforts of one inmate editor. And when he, named Wilbert Rideau, he actually had a program on NPR.
Really?
Yeah. When he got out, which was a couple or 3 years ago, he wrote a book called In the Place of Justice, which was a terrific book. I recommend it to anyone interested in the subject. He also came and visited San Quentin, and he made a real impression, especially with Arnulfo Garcia, whom you just heard speaking as the editor. He said he had managed to do a lot of very significant work at Angola because he kind of, you know, watched his P's and Q's and took it easy. He only went as far as it seemed prudent to go, but he kept at it. And those two injunctions, one is, you know, don't get carried away and pound the table too hard, and the other is just persevere. Those two things put together, I think, will be very helpful. So if you ask, well, was the San Quentin news raising hell about inmate conditions at Pelican Bay, which is the worst prison in the state? No, they weren't.
And what about the control? Who has censorship control over this? I was reading an article in the LA Times about the newspaper, and they made mention of a review of a book, Makes Me Want to Holler, a memoir about growing up black in America, and the prison officials yanked it, fearing it would inflame racial tension. Does that happen very often, Joan?
No, and that's the only thing that they're really looking for, is anything that would create racial any kind of tension. And the men pretty much know what to stay away from in terms of stories like that. But then the paper goes to the public information officer and the warden, and they check things out. And that's happened a couple of times where they've said, you know, we really think we ought to, in one case, hold this story because of some fear of some kind of retribution, but it doesn't happen very often.
Mm-hmm. And what about for the people who are in the prison? How important is the paper? Are people really anxious to get it when it comes out once a month? Do they have discussion groups about articles? How is it received?
Oh, it is very well received. It's even now pretty well received by the correctional officers. Or many of them, certainly not all, but many of them. I think initially there was a feeling among correctional officers that, you know, inmates shouldn't have a voice. They should just shut up and do their time. But as the paper, I think rather cannily, has begun to run articles about retiring correctional officers and correctional officers doing good things,
right,
it's become, these guys like to see their name in the paper, just
sure,
like everyone else
sure,
likes to see their name in the paper. So the paper is pretty well embraced by virtually everybody within the prison. I heard one comment, a couple, 3 months ago, one inmate said, you know, where's that paper? Where is it? Where is it? He said, you know, people around here feel that that paper's more important than the food. Well, of course, the food isn't all that good, but what he meant was that this was a very, very high priority among inmates.
Yeah. I think I read something else, though, that one of the inmates said, you better not criticize the food.
That's what paper shut down way back in the old days. In fact, that was when they came to me and asked me to help them with it. Because if you ask anybody, what's the worst part about San Quentin, they will tell you, the food. So there's no way you can write an objective story about the food. So anyway, they kept getting shut down back in the old days. So we don't mention the food much, do we, Steve? I haven't.
No. I thought it would be fun to have a sort of a restaurant critic who talked about what was good and what was bad. But that was shot down in a big hurry by the inmate.
Oh, that's too bad. That would have been interesting to read. So how do you come up with what will be in the issue? Do you sit around and brainstorm? Are you involved in those sessions?
Well, one thing that should be mentioned is the transition of the paper. When it was started up again in the spring of 2008, there was only one guy on the staff who'd ever had any sort of relationship with journalism. And there was one of the guys Joan just mentioned who got out and has a job with a weekly in the Central Valley, a guy named David Marsh. The rest of them were oblivious to how one puts out a newspaper. So the advisors did an awful lot of the work. I remember I used to lay out the pages and write the headlines, and Joan and the others would virtually write the stories. That's not the case anymore. By now, there are meetings at which the upcoming issue is discussed, and what goes on page one, on page three, and on the back page. And while the advisors sit in on those meetings and occasionally will offer a thought, the decisions are made almost entirely by the inmates because they have, over the course of the years, gotten their own ideas about what the paper should look and feel like.
Mm-hmm. So how have you grown such interest?
Excuse me?
How have you grown the interest? You only had one person who knew anything about it, and now you've got all these people. How did that happen?
They're fast learners. They've learned a lot very quickly, and then they continually help each other. And then we're still doing a lot of teaching also between the guild and then also working with the men on stories. Often they'll have a story and they'll want to sit down and talk about, you know, I'm not quite sure how to present this. What do you suggest? And we'll talk to them a little bit about it. But at this point, they are making most of those decisions and just with our help rather than our being the leads on those things.
Thank you very much, Connor, for your call. We welcome more phone calls. We're talking with two of the advisors to the San Quentin News, an article that caught our attention appearing in the LA Times a little while ago, earlier in January. And it's fascinating what they're doing. And they're one of the very few prisons in the country that are distributing a newspaper that is run by the inmates, and the prison itself sounds like it has a lot going on within the walls, lots of programs, lots to write about. We're welcoming phone calls for both our guests if you'd like to join our conversation. The phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And tomorrow during this time period, we have talked with Elizabeth Rosenthal from the New York Times on several occasions as her series continues about healthcare in this country. Very, very well done and somewhat infuriating. She wrote an article on the front page Sunday. You may have seen it on the sharp climb in salaries for some medical specialties and why they have gone up so much higher than other kinds of doctors. And as a result, we're facing really a shortage of primary care doctors. So Elizabeth will be with us tomorrow during this time period. We were listening to the editor of the San Quentin News. This is a reporter for the news whose name is Kevin Sawyer, talking about the importance of the paper. And here's what he has to say.
Okay. My name is Kevin Sawyer. I'm a staff writer for the San Quentin News. One of the reasons I write is because there's a movement in this country for prison reform. The San Quentin News is going to be on the forefront of that. Other states will look to California to see the changes that we're making, and San Quentin is a flagship prison where those changes are taking place.
Well, that was an interesting comment. California at the forefront, San Quentin and prison reform. What exactly was he referencing? And does the newspaper further the cause of prison reform? Steve?
Well, I don't know what. I know Kevin. We both know Kevin. He's a wonderful, smart guy, one of the very most competent people on the newspaper staff. But I'll be darned if I don't wear teeth. Means when he says they're on the forefront of prison reform. I think there's a little wishful thinking going on there. Maybe we're just a little jaded by the fact that we're present for some of the less appetizing aspects of California's prison system. Is I don't know whether you know, but the governor and the federal judges are engaged in this seemingly endless struggle over whether to reduce the number of prisoners within the state. I think it's now been as high as 140% of its design capacity, and the feds are saying bring it down to, I think, what, Joan, 120%, 130%, and the governor's resisting. So I'll have to ask Kevin the next time I see him what he had in mind with that comment.
Yeah. Well, I know that in the recent newspaper, which is the one that I read, there was an article about sentencing for drug offenders, Governor Brown vetoing the bill to lower drug charges, which would have reduced the amount of time that offenders serve for possession of certain drugs, which would, Joan, of course, address the very issue that Steve was talking about.
Yeah, there are a lot of ideas, but nothing really that's been put into that's really working. Some of the sentencing is just absolutely ridiculous. You heard Arnulfo say 65 years to life. That was for dealing drugs and not showing up for a court appearance and going. He went to Mexico. So when he came back, he got sentenced to 65 years, no violent crimes, you know, nothing. So some of these are just really seem to be over the top. We always say when we take over the prison system, things will be different, but I don't see that happening.
Mm. I think there's a pretty deep fascination about why it is so many people are in prison, what happens in their lives, and they wind up in prison, particularly the people who you've been working with, who are really smart and very creative and obviously could be making big contributions in the world of writing and distributing information outside the walls of San Quentin. And I know you can't answer in terms of what happened to everybody, but do you hear common threads at all? Do you have a better understanding of how people wind up in prison?
Well, it seems to be two things.
Either that I would mention. First is that almost every case, it's said that 90% of the women, of whom there are not many, but 80% of the men within the California prison system have a substance abuse issue that contributed to the fact that they're in there. Now, that substance includes alcohol. And that doesn't mean they were drug dealers. A surprisingly small percentage of the people overall in the system are there, you know, for dealing an ounce of weed. That's not really what gets you into the California prison system anymore. However, the bigger, more serious drugs, alcohol included, often prompted a behavior. You know, either they robbed a house because of it, or it was involved in the bad decision they made that got them in there. So it's very often also a terrible home life. And I have talked at great length with, I don't know, about a dozen of the, two dozen of the inmates, and it's surprising how many of them cite this just awful home life as, and they don't blame it. They don't, they're way past that. Mm-hmm. I just say, okay, tell me about what it was like growing up. And you hear some pretty hair-raising stories for sure.
Yeah.
So Joan, I'd say home life and substance abuse lead to bad decisions.
Uh-huh. Joan, do you want to add to that? Or
I was going to say that there were, I saw two main reasons, one being drugs, and the other is one moment in somebody's life when they did something that's just going to destroy their whole life.
Mm.
Many of them have been involved with gangs or have had, you know, been dealing drugs or something that has been, but then there are others that are there for just one thing that if they could go back and change, they would.
Mm-hmm. And what about those you work with who once they get out, some of them won't get out, but once they get out, will find a job and will find success? What is it that has been able to help transform them within the walls of San Quentin? Joan?
Well, there are many, many programs, AA and NA and those kind of programs, and then anger management. Anything that you could possibly think of, it's there at San Quentin. Plus, religion is very important at San Quentin, too. There are groups that are Catholic, Jewish, Protestant, and Steve, help me, there are just other Muslim and smaller ones. And I think many of the men take part in the religious groups. What I think is part of it, education, big part of it. There's just about any problem you've got, there's a program for it. And the men also are pretty supportive of each other. And it's so different from when I was there in the 80s and there were gunshots, there were things going on all the time. Now it's very, in fact, people always ask me, aren't you worried when you're at San Quentin? I feel safer at San Quentin than just about anywhere else. It's that way.
Hmm. Is that true for you, Steve, as
oh,
well?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Absolutely. And as I said earlier, my initial thought was, well, I'll give it a whirl for a day or two, but I don't see what could possibly interest me in coming into this place. Well, I got cooked. And, so I'm both very engaged in the process and a little surprised at my level of commitment.
Hmm. Let's listen again to the chief editor-in-chief of the paper we heard at the beginning of the show, Arnulfo Garcia, who talks a little bit about the types of stories and the importance, and I think a lot of people read newspapers for this as well, the importance of sports, and then we'll have our guest talk about what he has to say.
We do profiles. We do stories on staff. Sports is a big thing in the San Quentin News. We have a sports editor who's out there doing stories on football, baseball, basketball. Recently, we had the Golden State Warriors come in and play the San Quentin news team. And I would have to say it was a very challenging game, although the Warriors, Golden State Warriors, did win the game, but not by a very large number. Though we have a criminal background and we've done a lot of things in the past that weren't right for our communities, today I feel that we are giving back to our communities by being a voice for the voiceless.
That was an important phrase, being a voice for the voiceless.
Yeah, Arnulfo shaded things a little bit there. When he says the San Francisco or the Golden State Warriors came in, who came in was the front office personnel of the Golden State Warriors.
Oh, okay.
You think, come on. You know, the Warriors are a pretty good basketball team here. And no, it wasn't just the San Quentin News staff that played them. It was a group of the better basketball players in San Quentin facing off against the front office staff of the Golden State Warriors. I had to laugh when I heard you pick that quote up from the L.A. Times story.
Yeah.
Yes. And I had to laugh when I heard it.
Yeah. Joan?
Some of them had been were retired warriors.
Uh-huh.
I think there were a couple that were retired professionals, but yeah, still.
What about, and this is true of newspapers, I think, now, the importance of sports in a newspaper and the importance of reading about sports to the inmates of San Quentin. It's a big deal, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's a huge deal, and I must say, I'm going to give myself a little credit for that, because when I first came in there, they didn't have any sports coverage at all.
Oh.
And I had been the executive sports editor of a daily here in San Francisco before I wandered off and got my own newspaper. And so I thought, good gracious, that sports is terrifically important here, and so it's definitely grown. First, the sports editor got one page, and now he has two, and I'm sure he has in mind having three.
I'm sure you're right.
So, yes, sports is a big deal.
Let's go to some more phone calls. John in Chicago. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have three quick questions for you. I do visit prisons as part of my occupation, so I do have a little bit of background in the prison system, and I know that just being in there, there's a overwhelming need to just, you know, as you are aware, to keep the peace, and you need that old quote going, you know, idle hands are the devil's playthings. And I'm just wondering why that this isn't replicated in other states. Like, why is just you make it sound like it's such a great thing to have all these programs? I mean, aside from funding, is there a policy that's, you know, that other states are struggling with? The second question is, is there a way for the public could see the news, or is it only, you know, specifically for the inmates of San Quentin? And thirdly, what are specific topics? I know you asked them, you said they cover sports and things of that nature, but are there any specific topics that you could, you know, refer to on the air that they actually cover in the paper? And I'll take my answer my question off the air. Thank you
all
very
right
much.
And let's take those.
The principal answer to that is yes, you can read the paper. It's I started a website which is not especially polished, but it's got the paper on it. So if you want to go and read copies of the San Quentin News dating back for many years, including a copy of the Wall City News put out in the 30s, go to www.sanquentinnews.com. San Quentin News, all one word, all lowercase, or I guess Google will handle your query pretty much any way you want. But yes, it is up on the internet.
Mm-hmm. So why is it that other papers, other prisons don't follow suit, Joan?
Well, I tried for years. I have a prison newspaper project, prison advisors project, that I've tried to get funding to go into other prisons. What my idea would be to go into an area that's interested, find someone who has a journalism background, train them, and then bring them into the newspaper and do a journalism courses and start up newspapers. But raising the funds has not worked out, and I don't think the other one other. What did we hear, Steve? One other prison was maybe interested in a paper, but there just doesn't seem to be that interest. I think they don't think they can control them.
Yeah, interesting. Thank you, John. Let's go to one more phone call. We're almost out of time. Donna in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering, okay, they're talking about having the newspaper and stuff started. Does this mean that the education of the prisoners is better than what they say it is?
Well, the education in San Quentin is quite good. I can't speak for anywhere else.
San Quentin, is, as I mentioned earlier, is sort of at the top of the pile by quite a long shot. They say there are more programs and more volunteers at San Quentin than there are at the other 33 prisons combined.
Goodness gracious.
So that's... whether what's happening there can be replicated elsewhere, I just don't know. Joan says she's been trying and hasn't had a lot of success.
Mm-hmm. So are both of you going to stay with this project for a while?
I can't imagine not.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, it's fascinating, and we thank you so much for being with us this hour. Thanks.
Sure, and let me say, if someone's really interested in having a look at the paper or past issues of the paper,
yes,
www.sanquentinnews.com.
Yeah, I urge our listeners to do that because it's a very well-written newspaper. Some of the articles are really compelling in the history of it is interesting. It's always fun to go back and read old newspapers. Our guest this hour, Steve McNamara, who was owner, editor, and publisher of the Pacific Sun, now advises the San Quentin News, and Joan Lissator, who is writer and producer for Life Stories DVD, a video production company. She's also worked as a reporter, newspaper reporter, returned Peace Corps volunteer, and also an advisor to the San Quentin News. Thanks to Judith Sears-Poisson for production. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for on-air work. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about the relationship between China and North Korea, and then Elizabeth Rosenthal on the latest in her healthcare series from Sunday's New York Times. Thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network.